Good morning.
Good morning. Please be seated. We are here in the matter of Carradine versus the City of Sparks. This is case number 51920. You would note that the court has reconstituted itself in light of Justice Perigueri's disqualification on this matter. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Very well.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm Rachel McKenzie on behalf of Appellant Councilman Michael A. Carradine. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The Ethics Commission's censure of Councilman Carradine for voting on the Lazy 8 project cannot stand for two reasons that the United States Supreme Court did not address and that are unique to Nevada's disqualification provision. First, as this court stated, the catch-all disqualification provision fails to sufficiently describe what relationships are included within its restriction. It certainly gave Councilman Carradine no reasonable notice that his political relationship with a key volunteer would be disqualifying. And aside from this very real notice problem, the failure to sufficiently describe what relationships are included within the provision's restriction presents an invitation to selective enforcement. And second, requiring disqualification on the basis of this political relationship places an intolerable burden on the right to associate on a political campaign. A statute is impermissibly vague if persons of common intelligence must guess at its meaning and will differ as to its application. This court correctly recognized that the catch-all disqualification provision does not inform or guide public officers as to what relationships require recusal. The United States Supreme Court did not refute that assessment and, in fact, went out of its way to say that vagueness is very much still on the table in this case. And this court is not the only body that has recognized that there's a vagueness problem here. In 2009, the legislature amended this provision to say that recusal would only be required in clear cases. Unfortunately, as this court also recognized, it did not tell us what clear cases are. It gave no definition of what those clear cases would be. There was simply no way for Councilman Carradine to predict that the Ethics Commission was going to read this statute as it did to cover his relationship with a key campaign volunteer.
Well, he had an opportunity 6 months ahead to seek and obtain an opinion on that from the Ethics Commission, correct?
Well, the record's actually not clear how far in advance of the vote Councilman Carradine knew that the two critical factors here, one, that the issue was going to come up for a vote, and two, that Carlos Vazquez was working for the Lazy 8. But even putting that aside, Your Honor, the advisory opinion process does not cure the problems here for two reasons. First, the process comes too late. Councilman Carradine, when he was a candidate trying to decide whether or not he would develop a relationship with Carlos Vazquez, could not actually go to the commission at that point. And second, Your Honor, even putting that issue aside, an advisory opinion process has never been held as a cure-all for an impermissibly vague statute. No court has ever looked at statutory language and said, this is very vague, but there's an advisory opinion process, so that's okay. And in fact, this court in Dunphy v. Sheehan held that a financial disclosure provision was impermissibly vague despite the availability of an advisory opinion process. It is the legislature's responsibility to draft clear statutes, and they cannot delegate that responsibility to the commission. They cannot say, well, there are things called conflicts of interest, and if you want to know what they are, give the commission a call. It is the legislature's responsibility to give people notice of what is included within a provision's restrictions. And they did not do that here. As this court recognized, it does not inform or guide public officials as to what requires recusal. It says nothing about political relationships. It says nothing about close friendships. There was no settled interpretation to this language. Literally, Nevada is the only jurisdiction that uses this kind of language. And the city attorney advised Councilman Carradine that the relationship wasn't covered. And the commissioners could not even agree on which of the enumerated relationships this one was substantially similar to. I would submit that this case is very similar to the case the Supreme Court decided in Gentile versus State Bar of Nevada, where it said that where a statute uses classic terms of degree, that have no settled interpretation, that that presents a vagueness problem. And that vagueness problem is particularly heightened whereas here the statute touches on First Amendment rights. In this case, the right of Councilman Kerrigan and Carlos Vazquez to associate for the purpose of advancing Councilman Kerrigan's political campaign. Justice Kennedy correctly recognized that prohibiting a legislative official from voting on matters advanced by a political supporter places a logical and inevitable burden on speech and association preceding the vote. And the types of volunteer relationships at issue in this case are uniquely important to our democratic system, as the Supreme Court has recognized over and over again. The Commission's decision to disqualify Councilman Kerrigan because the Lazy Eight was associated with one of his key political volunteers puts an intolerable drag on these sorts of relationships from both perspectives. The candidate who wants to get elected and wants to select the best volunteers to be able to do that has to ask himself, is this a politically active person? Is he going to be having business before the legislature down the line? What is that business going to be? I take my duty seriously. I want to be able to vote on all the matters that come before me, so I better not associate with someone who is politically active because I'm going to end up having to sit out on a lot of votes. From the volunteer's perspective, he's thinking, well, I want to advance the candidates who are going to support the types of positions that I'm interested in. But if I do that, I'm going to risk, when I go before the legislature, disqualifying the very vote I worked so hard to get put on the council. If you're passionate about certain issues, as Carlos Vazquez is, or you think you might be, you simply cannot become active in political campaigns. And these kinds of burdens are severe. The censure of Councilman Kerrigan, because he was thought, and this is the legislature's language, beholden to a person who was instrumental in his success, raises constitutional concerns of the first magnitude. That's what Justice Kennedy said in this case. If Nevada had declared that nobody who serves as a campaign manager could lobby, there's no question that that kind of restriction would be subject to strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny would also apply.
Well, was the vote a true piece of legislation, or was it essentially a quasi adjudicative or administrative decision on a particular change in zoning?
A couple of responses to that, Your Honor. The first being that this court has already found that it was a legislative act. The Nevada legislature presented to this court an argument the last time we were before this court saying it was not legislative, it was adjudicative. This court found it was legislative anyway. The U.S. Supreme Court did not dispute that finding.
But that's a problem with the association First Amendment argument that you're pressing, which is in the adjudicative setting or quasi-adjudicative setting, that's a bit of a different animal.
It is a different animal, absolutely, Your Honor.
Then you get all the way over into Caperton-type issues.
Well, I would submit that Caperton, which was authored by Justice Kennedy, who also authored a concurrence in this case and says quite specifically that the restrictions you can place on judges are quite different from the restrictions that you can place on elected officials. And again, this court did not find that this was a quasi-adjudicative issue. This is a legislative issue. So did the United States Supreme Court.
But answer it on the merits, apart from the findings. Would you grant that this was, in fact, an individual land use decision for an exception from a zoning ordinance? It was not the passing of an ordinance.
It wasn't the passing of an ordinance, Your Honor, but I would not agree that this was quasi-adjudicative as opposed to legislative.
Tell me why not.
Yes, Your Honor, I will. This had all of the hallmarks of legislation as the Supreme Court laid them out in a case called Bogan versus Harris. It was in the form of a vote by politicians that had the discretion to go either way. Candidates were running on this very issue. It was the central issue in the 2006 Sparks election, and it was a fundamental issue on the character of the community and how the community would develop. Those are issues that the Supreme Court in Bogan versus Harris said are how you determine whether something legislative or not. So I believe it is legislation. This court found that it was legislation. The Supreme Court found that it was legislation, and that's the land that we're in. So getting back to the burdens here, as I was saying, if Nevada had said that a campaign manager cannot lobby, that would be subject to strict scrutiny. If it, on the other hand, said that a candidate should be fined for choosing as a campaign manager someone with business before the legislature, I don't think there's any question that strict scrutiny would apply in that circumstance, too. And that is exactly the effect of this law. It is no less burdensome simply because these burdens are come about because of an indirect effect of this legislation. That's what the Supreme Court pointed out in Davis versus SEC. It's not the case that just because a burden exists because of a statutorily imposed choice, we don't consider that to be any less burdensome. And I would submit that this provision could not even survive intermediate scrutiny, which says that you have to identify an important interest and burden no more speech or association than necessary to further that interest. The commission has, and the legislature have identified no state interest in holding that a political relationship or political loyalty is corrupting or should be disqualifying. And Turner Broadcasting, United States Supreme Court decision, makes clear that a legislature cannot simply posit the existence of a disease and then go about curing it without proving that a disease exists in the first place. The commission and the legislature have come up with not one shred of evidence that there's something particularly damaging to the integrity of public officials or that there is something particularly corrupting about the political relationship between a campaign manager and his candidate. And in fact, in Citizens United, the United States Supreme Court made explicitly clear that our democratic system is premised on political responsiveness. And Justice Kennedy made clear in his McConnell concurrence that there is a difference between corrupt influence and access and influence and access, the latter being not only permissible, but exactly what our democratic system is designed to foster.
What about the rights of the neighboring landowners whose interests are affected by the change in zoning?
Well, again, Your Honor,
the city's interest or the government's interest in avoiding claims that that determination was infected insofar as their rights were concerned, their due process rights, which we've recognized something in that area.
Well, this is getting back to the discussion Your Honor and I were having before as to whether this is legislation or adjudication. If it's legislation, as this court has found, as the United States Supreme Court has accepted, as I believe under Bogan versus Scott Harris it is, you do not have a right to a neutral legislature. And yes, legislation is always going to affect some people one way and some people another, and it's up to the council to decide which way to go on that. If Your Honors don't have any more questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Mr. Marlowe.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Jeremy Marwell for the Nevada Commission on Ethics. Under Nevada's neutral and generally applicable conflict of interest law, the Commission censured Michael Carrigan for voting on a casino project in which his largest vendor, three-time and ongoing campaign manager, and close personal friend had a direct financial interest. For three reasons, this Court should uphold that censure. First, the statute gave Mr. Carrigan constitutionally sufficient notice that he had to recuse, at a minimum because he had an ongoing and substantial business-like relationship with Mr. Vasquez. The Due Process Clause does not require the mathematical certainty that Mr. Carrigan would request, and that certainty would be inconsistent with the history and tradition of conflict of interest statutes in this country. Second, the association claim is plainly waived, and in any case, a realistic view of how this statute operates and has operated for the past 10 years shows that it doesn't burden associational rights. Third, subjecting the statute to heightened scrutiny would deprive the legislature of the flexibility it needs to protect the integrity and impartiality of the state's government. And heightened scrutiny would risk substituting the views of judges for those of the legislature about when a conflict of interest requires recusal. Starting first with vagueness, the statute's plain language satisfies the constitutional minimum requirements of due process, particularly as applied to the facts of this case. By its plain terms, subsection 8E, the only section that Mr. Carrigan is challenging, covers a specific category of a public officer's closest relationships, relationships that are akin to those in the four enumerated categories, including business partners and family. These kinds of relationships implicate the same strong concerns about a public officer's impartiality and potential self-interest as in matters involving a spouse or a brother or a business partner.
Counsel, the term of art you seem to skip over. You read D, you did not read E, which is a catch-all that relates back or in your position, where it says any other commitment or relationship that is substantially similar, which seems to be our word of art that we have some difficulty with, to a commitment or relationship described in this subsection. That is the word of art. And the other issue, I guess, I'd like you to touch upon, if it is so clear from this record, then why would Mr. Kerrigan be required to get a determination from the Ethics Committee as to an advisory opinion, if you would comment on that, if it's so clear?
Mr. Kerrigan wasn't required to get an opinion in advance from
you. You seem to assert in the briefing that because he failed to do so, he was just, I'll just say, he was liable. That's, if I read the briefs correctly, that was a position taken by the Ethics Commission. Since he didn't do that, he could have done that. He was liable under the statute.
Well, that's the decision the legislature made in setting up the statute, that it describes certain categories of disqualifying relationships and provides an advisory opinion mechanism if a public officer has concerns about how his facts apply to a specific case. We're not aware of any case in which the U.S. Supreme Court or this court has struck down on vagueness grounds a statute, a civil statute, that has an advisory opinion mechanism available to it.
And let's go back to the vagueness issue itself as a substantially similar. How is that descriptive enough on this occasion?
Well, I think that this court has said on several occasions that you have to interpret the ethics and government law as a whole, and you don't look to any one specific word. And so the substantially similar language occurs in the context not only of 8E, but of the overarching requirement, what the standard is for when a public officer has to abstain. But we'll start with the substantially similar language itself. Substantial, in this context, is a word of limitation. So it's carving out relationships that are insubstantially or immaterially similar. And we know that subsection 8E comes at the end of four enumerated categories. And when you look at those categories, members of a household, close family members, employers, or those with whom a public officer has a substantial and continuing business relationship, those carve out a public officer's closest relationships in the world. So subsection 8E is covering relationships that implicate the same kinds of concerns.
But counsel, on this point, the members of the commission were in conflict about which one of these was within the catch-all phrase. As I read the transcript of the U.S. Supreme Court hearing, even the justices didn't understand what that meant, although they didn't decide the question. What is it? I understand your as-applied point, but what is it that Councilman Kerrigan was supposed to understand connected him to one of those four? Which one do you say it is?
So the commission unanimously found that this relationship was substantially similar to both a substantial and continuing business relationship and a family relationship. The commission conducts its proceedings and deliberates initially on the record, and so the disagreement or initial disagreement that you discussed was part of the natural deliberative process where the commissioners were considering how the facts applied to this case.
So some felt that the Vasquez relationship was akin to a familial relationship, and some thought that it was akin to a business relationship.
So a relationship can be doubly disqualifying. You could be a business partner with your brother, for instance. And the commission here found that this was substantially similar to both a business relationship and a family relationship.
You answered Justice Douglas on the point about the advisory opinion in a way that I'd like to pose this question. Is there any case in America that says that that by having available within the statutory construct an advisory commission process that cures a vagueness defect in the statute?
So we would rely on the letter carriers case from the U.S. Supreme Court, where the court undertook a textual analysis. That case involved the Federal Hatch Act, which was a prohibition on certain political involvement by federal employees. The court undertook a textual analysis. The textual provision in question was taking active participation in political affairs. And the court looked at what that meant in light of the statute as a whole and also found it important, the court's word, that there was an advisory opinion mechanism for federal employees to...
But that case doesn't hold that the presence of an advisory commission process cures an otherwise vague statute.
No, that's correct, Your Honor. It doesn't say that alone was sufficient. But the court doesn't have to decide in this case whether the presence of an advisory commission mechanism would be sufficient to cure a vague statute, because there's a significant amount of textual detail in this statute that provided notice to Mr. Carrigan. And we think, at a minimum, he had constitutionally sufficient notice because of the business-like relationship with Mr.
Why is Nevada the only state in the country that has the catch-all provision?
We would disagree that Nevada is the only state in the country that has a catch-all relationship. Different states may use different language, but we cite in our brief a number of statutes which, if anything, are more vague and more broad than the language Nevada chose. The New Jersey statute, the Rhode Island statute. And this, a conflict of interest rule, you would expect...
So you'd take Mr. Kerrigan's case in those states because they're more vague than Nevada's.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just... Never mind. That's unfair. You're doing it. I couldn't resist wanting to raise... What was a poor joke?
Conflict of interest statutes are particularly... You would think that these would be a particularly apt kind of example where a local government or a state, in this case, would adjust the degree of sensitivity to account for local circumstances. So it's not unusual to see, variation in the kinds of statutes. But at a minimum, we think...
So your approach would be that the legislature's motive was to identify four specific areas, and if the commission felt that there was something that was substantially similar in the interest of, in a broad interest of protecting ethics in government, this should be recognized.
I think so. The legislature, Mr. Carrigan's view of the Due Process Clause would, we believe, result in a fairly grave change in the way conflict of interest statutes would work. To require the legislature to lay out in black and white every possible specific relationship and then freeze those in place without any flexibility to account for the kinds of relationships that might fall through the cracks. So as we said it in our brief, a fiancé or a domestic partner or a long-time live-in boyfriend or girlfriend would present the same kinds of concerns about impartiality and objectivity that are presented by this core category that are laid out in the statute. But none of those are actually covered if subsection 80 is severed from the statute. And so we believe the catch-all is a substantially similar language is necessary. It's part of the inherent common law nature of conflict of interest statutes. I'd like to turn briefly to association. We believe that claim is waived because it wasn't part of Mr. Carrigan's case until the U.S. Supreme Court. In any case, this law does not suppress associational rights because it applies rarely and only when two separate conditions are simultaneously met. First, a public officer has a continuing and close relationship with a particular person. And second, that person has a personal and financial, usually financial interest in a matter that comes before the public officer. And even then, the legislature, in the text of the statute, carved out in advance the entire universe of interests that we might think fall at the heart of political association. So general matters of policy that bring people together because they, to express their views and to be politically active, supporters of the NRA or the NAACP. Relationships like that do not require disqualification because the person's interest is no greater than, in the words of the statute, the resulting benefit or detriment is no greater to that person than the general community or group. This case, unlike these general policy concerns, involved a single development project in which the developer had Mr. Vasquez on a $10,000 a month retainer. In 10 years on the books, perhaps most telling, there's no evidence that this statute has burdened associational rights. Put simply, without such a showing on the record, the First Amendment does not immunize an otherwise disqualifying relationship just because it happens to occur in the political context. And if the court decides to reach the question, we believe that the law should be reviewed only for reasonableness. Mr. Carrigan's approach would apply heightened scrutiny to a whole host of laws in Nevada and other states that involve a state's legitimate interest in structuring and regulating its self-government. An official who disagreed with the scope of an ethics law could drag the government into court and ask the court to second-guess the legislature's judgment about when a particular conflict of interest would require recusal. And even if most challenges would fail, this intrusion by state and federal courts would deprive the legislature of the deference that it has traditionally received in regulating its sovereign self-government. The recusal here was not based on a political relationship. It was based on a commercial relationship that was similar to a business relationship. Mr. Carrigan and Mr. Vasquez had tens of thousands of dollars going back and forth between Carrigan and the companies that Mr. Vasquez organized as a commercial venture as part of the way he made his living. The Commission's opinion engaged specifically with the definition of business, and Carrigan essentially in this case seeks a kind of common law exemption to the otherwise neutral and generally applicable conflict of interest laws.
Why didn't they use D then?
Well, some of the commissioners in their initial deliberations did find that this relationship was a business relationship.
Well, you're just talking about thousands of dollars. That sounds like a business relationship.
Yes, and that's part of why this would be a particularly inappropriate case to speculate about how another kind of a political relationship involving a mere campaign volunteer would potentially affect associational rights.
Counsel, you keep throwing out the term, you've touched on it a couple of times, common law, but we have a statutorily created construct that we're having to deal with, not a common law interpretation. So in this case, we're still this kind of quagmire, so to speak, as to whether or not the language is specific enough in this context to give an ordinary person, ordinary elected official, notice as to what's expected. The district court used the Pickering test, but the Pickering test, in all fairness, is applied as to an employee, not as to an elected official. Any comment?
So the Pickering test involves speech, and it involves a regulation of speech, and it's just one example of when the Supreme Court has said that we don't apply strict scrutiny.
That was as to an employee, not an elected official. Is there a distinction, or should a distinction be made? As when we're talking about people who've been elected by the voters for their particular, I don't know, I'll use the term bias.
We believe that perhaps a more important distinction for Pickering is that was a content-based regulation of speech. And here we have a line of Supreme Court case law involving ballots like Burdick versus Takushi that apply a lower level of scrutiny because in recognition of the state's important interest in regulating the processes of self-government. So we would respectfully request that Burdick versus Takushi is a more appropriate standard. If there are no other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Merwin. Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to address a couple of points very quickly. First, as to this issue of substantially similar to a substantial and continuing business relationship, it's important to note that the Commission actually did not say specifically that this relationship was substantially similar to both a substantial and continuing business relationship. Sorry, Your Honor, I get a little bit caught up in that language. Or to a close family relationship. What it said was that the sum total of this relationship, the gestalt of this relationship, if you will, was substantially similar to the enumerated categories, including the two we just mentioned, not exclusive to those two. And as to whether or not this was actually substantially similar to a substantial and continuing business relationship, The commission relies very heavily on this idea that there was money going back and forth between Councilman Kerrigan and Carlos Vasquez. What Carlos Vasquez was doing was exactly what any volunteer campaign manager in a local relation, in a local election would do, which is everything the campaign needs, and they were at cost fees going back and forth. What would happen would be, and this is an example that's actually in the record, I believe, at Joint Appendix page 200, Carlos Vasquez, for example, would have to send out mailings. They would cost about $4,500 in postage. The campaign would give him $4,500. He would take that $4,500, and he would give it to the post office. If that's going to be considered to be substantially similar to a substantial and continuing business relationship, then any volunteer would fall under that. Anything that I could do for a campaign for free, I could also charge them for, and that would mean that anything that I do for the campaign for free means that I'm now in this business relationship land. I would also point out that letter carriers, which the commission relies very heavily on, specifically says that the statute in that case was not open-ended, it was limited, and it was not designed to give the Civil Service Commission a subsidiary legislative role. But that is exactly what this statute does. It abdicates to the commission the legislature's responsibility to define what relationships are disqualifying. I would also point out that although the commission suggests that we're saying that the statute has to actually explicitly enumerate every relationship that's disqualifying, there are two responses to that point. The first being, other jurisdictions don't seem to have a problem with enumerating disqualifying relationships. And the second being, we are absolutely not saying that there is no kind of catch-all that a state could use. But if you're going to use a substantially similar kind of language, you should, at an absolute minimum, identify what it is about the enumerated categories that you think is the key thread through them and that you think the relationship that substantially similar to is disqualifying. For those reasons, Your Honor,
may I ask a question?
Go ahead and I'll ask mine.
Why doesn't the phrasing in the lead-in of this statute, which talks about his commitment in a private capacity to the interests of others, why doesn't that afford that general umbrella guideline that you just alluded to? Could the statute have ended there and be okay?
No, Your Honor, and in fact, that's exactly what the district court in Gates about 12 years ago addressed. No, if it ended there, it would be even worse. But they did not correct the problem by adding these four enumerated relationships and then this catch-all, which the commission has interpreted to cover any relationship that is close. And I would also point out that it actually doesn't cover just your closest relationships. It's anything within the third degree of consanguinity, which includes your aunts, your uncles, your nieces, your nephews, your great-grandparents, and your great-grandchildren.
But why couldn't the legislature validly make that decision? They can make that call, correct? Even in your analysis, if they say that.
Yes, absolutely. But they did not say that with respect to close friends or with respect to political allies.
Justice Douglas.
Commission on Ethics has asserted that you have waived the association argument, and so that should be the end of the day. What is your position or your rebuttal as to their position?
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. Even if you agreed with that, and we don't think you should, but even if you did, the vagueness challenge, which everyone agrees is in this case and was not waived, would still be here, and it's an independent ground on which you could find this provision to be unconstitutional as applied to Councilman Kerrigan. But we did raise the association argument throughout this case. It's most clearly, if you look at even the closing arguments in the before the commission at pages, I believe, Joint Appendix 220 to 221, Councilman Kerrigan explicitly said, if you apply this provision to this relationship, you are eviscerating a constitutionally protected relationship. That language appears in our briefs before the district court. It appeared in the opening briefs before this court. Last time around, I can give you a page range. It would be our opening brief, pages 9 through 18, I believe. It was in the conclusion on page 23. It was over and over and over again that if the statute applied to this relationship, that would be a constitutional problem.
Chief, I have an additional question if Justice Douglas is finished. What is your analysis in a hypothetical in which the elected official is in a domestic partnership and the contest involves the role of the domestic partner?
I'm actually not sure that domestic partner wouldn't just be included in your household members if you live together and that would take care of that situation.
Well, as long as you're answering that, what about fiancé?
Do I have a fiancé?
No.
No. He mentioned the fiancé in his argument, saying that the fiancé would not be covered.
Right. Well, this would get to our point that it's not important. First of all, they obviously very easily could enumerate that situation. That's an easy one. Second of all, you can have a catch-all, but again, you should be enumerating what it is about the enumerated relationships that's a problem. And we would submit it's because you're essentially one step removed from the official himself so that he cannot disentangle his own interests from that of the person that you think creates this sort of corrupting influence.
So you could say romantic relationship or business relationship.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I hope not. For that reason, we request that the censure be vacated.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Marwell. This matter will stand submitted. The court will be in recess until this afternoon.